Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to episode 50 to 52, to fix our terrible numbering.
Yeah, to fix our numbering system.
The Gen Con special.
The Gen Con special.
Gen Con 2020.
Online edition. There's a lot of like suffixes to this.
Online edition.
So what did you start your day with on this wonderful Thursday of working at, well, Gen Conning? It's far less fun. I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah, it's very different. I spent all day at work instead of wandering around the vendor hall like normal. We were joking with the people that we played with that, you know, one of the things I thought about that I missed by not being there was walking around and seeing all the cool stuff in the vendor hall, but at the same time, also loving the fact that I don't have to be in the vendor hall with a billion other people.
Yep. I can deal with it too.
Yeah. I think you and I much readily, yeah. The artist I will miss, but we can talk about that towards the end. Yeah.
I watched a bit of the opening ceremonies. They rolled the dice.
Did you? Okay.
I was really hoping.
I was in class.
Like, you know how they chant, like, do not run.
Right. Yeah.
I was hoping they would like, do not DDoS the merch store, but they did not. It was pretty standard opening affair, I guess, except I could actually hear them this year. Cause I wasn't normally we stand on the balcony above the crowd and not in the crowd. So and then we watch the horde of people.
So we're not crushed to death.
Crushing each other into in the thing. But,
Black Friday.
Yeah, very Black Friday-esque.
Super Black Friday.
Didn't get to experience that. That's usually the opening ceremony. Did you guys do anything, watch any of the other stuff, doing work things?
No, unfortunately, I wasn't home in time to watch the... We had signed up for the Crash Course in Game Manufacturing, which I think would have been super interesting. And I'm hoping...
I did go to that. I did watch it. I had it on my monitor while I was working, so I caught most of it.
I was in class.
Yeah, I'm fortunate that I don't really need to pay attention much during work. it was like, it was hosted by Panda, game manufacturer. And they kind of just did an overview of like how you would request a quote and, you know, all that kind of things. And she went into the different pieces and different price, not like specifics on pricing. But, you know, and then a bunch of people ask questions on like their specific games of what they're working on and, you know, what should I do for this? Or like, what if I'm doing like a Kickstarter? Because I thought the Kickstarter ones were interesting because it's like, what if I don't know what my stretch goals are going to be, or I want to offer these things and I want different pricing, or what happens if 1,000 people order the base game, but 500 people do the upgraded pieces? So there's a lot of cool stuff around that. And they kind of walk through their whole process of like how you would... If you want to manufacture a game, like how you get in contact with them and get a quote, and then how they work with you through the whole process, and it sounded interesting.
Oh, so it was sounds like it was more of them kind of almost even soliciting.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
Do you want to manufacture? Okay, yeah.
This is a company holding a seminar.
Cool. Yeah, and I'm hoping with like some of these like you know events like this where you know normally you wouldn't get to sit in the place.
Right,
I hope that they put them so that. Because obviously it's on a computer. They could have saved them. And I hope that kind of stuff gets saved so that you can watch it later.
And then we played our first game of Gen Con, which was Plunderbund. Plunderbund.
Plunderbund.
Is it like German? Plunderbund.
It didn't sound very German. It's not themed very German.
No, it's definitely not.
There's no umlaut.
It's what? How did he describe it that someone from Dice Tower described it? Ogres...
No, if Al Capone were an orc,
this is the world it
would be in. Yeah.
And it's designed by Adam Chun and Woody Hutzel, who were our hosts for the game, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, we got to have both of them and the son of one.
The artist is Joe Shawcross and Stevo Torres, and it's published by Hutchu Enterprises. Description of it is, you lead a guild striving to dominate the market for illegal goods in the Sprawl, a city rich in history and lawlessness. Recruit and task an army of agents, spymasters, and others to build your reputation by selling your goods and causing chaos for your rivals. Through a light deck building mechanism, you attempt to create the strongest network of agents, racketeers, and the most desirable black market goods. Winners and losers are determined by a fun yet sophisticated supply and demand mechanic.
Which is why you have racketeers, because they're fun.
And the mechanics, area majority influence, card drafting, deck building, simulation, worker placement. So what was your impressions?
I really liked it. Work today sucked, and I was not looking forward to playing the game. And the description and the rules reminded me, what was the game that we played at Gen Con, the very end of Gen Con last year?
Crown of Amara. Yes.
Where it took a very long time to get through the rules, and it was like, oh my gosh. And then we finally started playing.
And we figured it out.
And we figured it out, and it got a lot more fun. I really enjoyed it.
I think we got into this a lot faster than that.
Yes, we got into it a lot
better. And I think it was a lot more fun, too.
Yes.
The rule section did make me think of the Crown of Amara experience.
Yes. And I also went there.
I think we were lucky we played this not on Sunday when we were very tired at the end of a con.
Right. Yes, this year's Gen Con, as we do, Eric loves to do the planning, but he'll send like, hey, review these games, what you guys want most, right? And that's why I want to bring that up, because we normally start with, would you pick this up off the shelf? And this was one where I think all three of us were actually pretty excited to play it based on the description. So I want to start with that, because I think the description, at least for me as like a non-strategist, sounds pretty exciting. And especially having the two of them, Woody started and it's kind of based off of a D&D world that he and his friend have been playing for like decades, right? And that to me also interested me, because we all kind of like the RPGs, and the whole idea of, as we know, if you've listened to any of our podcasts, BP is kind of into the thieving, smuggling thing. So I just wanted to go back to our normal like thing. Would you pick this off the shelf? And definitely based on that description.
I just like that the deck milling mechanic was a little bit different, and it was a lot lighter. I think with most deck builders, like you're really trying to like cull your deck. Like that's the whole thing. Like try to get it down to the base cards you want to play all the time. But you do
towards the end.
And the card, I think, remember at the very beginning, and I told you like, oh, they go in and out of your deck real fast.
Right.
It's like, I know we've played a game before that is like that. And I figured it out. It's like the bullets in Colt Express. They're in your deck long enough that they just take up space in your deck. And the difference is I don't think the bullet cards come out, right?
Eric, no, they stay in.
I think they always stay in your deck. Mm-hmm. Whereas this one, the favor cards come out when you get them. They just take up a spot in your deck.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was an interesting way, because all the cards were really like, you didn't really want to get rid of your cards.
Right.
Whereas in a normal deck builder, you do.
I could see how strategy wise, like playing it again, like you'd say, okay, I'm going to focus on like two of the four tracks.
Yeah.
Like, there's basically four different influence tracks that you can push down. So I think like targeting one or two, especially at the start, and then you might get rid of your other cards. So I could see how I think the deck building could get really strategic once you get into it.
I think like, don't get intimidated by the rules. Like it ends up playing a lot lighter than I think the rules make it come across.
Or maybe at least the rules explanation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And there are ways I feel like I could even strategize towards the end. Although like, I think with the expansions they're talking about might help beginners like me to figure out a strategy aid earlier on.
I could tell like the guild that I played, the powers were very specific, like
right.
they dealt with the appeal track.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of pushes you to, you're going to play a lot more appeal having those powers. Because you get
Just you're playing one more track,
yeah.
which gives you that much more boost in competitions, basically.
Yeah.
None of us won, by the way, if anyone was wondering.
We had a fourth player. She crushed us.
She did. She crushed us, which is one awesome that we were balanced male, female. Can I just say that? Like as Gen Con and we talk about diversity and inclusion, to just have like more females out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was wanting to mention the art, because I thought the art was really cool.
Because I'm waiting for this section.
The board was really cool. I really liked the back of that. I kept looking at the back of the card and being like, I'm mesmerized by it. Uh-huh. It's like a cool I don't know the style, but like just a very like artistic back of the card. Looked really cool.
It was super cool. Like at first I was placing my merchants, in fact, in locations where I could tell what the name of the market was, because that was really concerning to me that it had a cool name. And most of the places had cool names. And then the art on the cards, even the characters themselves, I felt like was really individualistic, and it added to it. It had some flavor text, yeah. Which
I think the only cards that were unique to guilds was the guild leader. All the other cards were the same, but like the card, the art is super interesting and like very cool to look at. The map is like, it looks busy, but gameplay wise, it is not busy. I think my only disappointment looking at the website is, so in Tabletop Simulator, and there's pictures on Board Game Geek of the actual, like, they, it looks like they made the pieces out of clay. So they have actual figurines, but the version that you buy has just meeples. So that's a little disappointing, because I definitely would like to have, like, I liked the agents with the fedoras and the racketeers having the
cap.
Folded cap. Yeah.
I wonder if that was a Kickstarter thing.
Kickstarter, yeah.
It might have been, yeah.
I do wish, like, thematically it had more, I think you mentioned at some point, like, more names of places and things, because I imagine if this is their D&D world, they probably have a lot more detail, and it would have been cool to, like, see all the businesses have names and stuff, but...
Yes!
Yeah, some of them did. Like, I think there was a laundromat that you could see it was laundry, but it was a little hard to tell, like, what the actual name of the laundromat was, but...
Would you play it again?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes, I would absolutely play it again, I think.
I would play it again as well. You, Eric?
I'd give it another go. I did feel like the only issue was that it seemed like to take a long time between turns.
But they did talk about how you could,
You could maybe cut it down, but it did still feel like there was a lot of downtime between people. And I think that was probably the worst thing in killing the flow of it. But I don't think that's a bad enough ding to not play it again.
Yeah,
absolutely.
All right, on to day two. Woo! Biology day.
Yeah, I kind of missed. Day two, Gen Con at home means work interrupts things.
Yeah.
It's definitely been a very different experience this year.
Yeah, so for day two, Kiwi and I played On the Origin of Species to kick it off. It is, I guess, a newer game from, we'll get into that, I guess. It's designed by Gerard Asensi and Farron Renalius. The artist is Emilio Sales.
So I think what it was, it was designed by in Spain by Montabor, and then Artana picked it up like 6 months later and ran a Kickstarter to do a print run. Their Kickstarter was pretty successful, and then I think now Genius Games is going to be picking it up to like do distribution and all that kind of stuff.
I guess the moral is if you have a good game on your hands, figure out a way to get it out there, because somebody will pick it up and run with it.
Oh, yeah.
The description is, assist Charles Darwin during the Beagle's journey across the Galapagos Islands, discovering new species and researching them in order to improve your knowledge. I love a good short description that really nails it.
Yeah.
The mechanics are hand management and tile placement. What'd you think of the game?
I really enjoyed it. The tile placement mechanics and like how you got your resources.
I guess we should start with a quick descriptor of how it actually played. So like... There's a track with the beagle, which is the ship on it. And then there's like little animal tiles throughout the map. And you do research and you put cubes on the animal tiles. And each one is like a land, air, or sea type of animal. And then in order to discover new species, which are new tiles you place on the board, you have to have like three water cubes and two air cubes.
So on your turn, you can either research, which lets you add cubes to tiles on the board, which will then give you those resources, or you can observe, which lets you find other animals that are on the left side using the resources that you paid. And then you
would pay those resources, and then you have to put the tile on the board with the restriction that it has to touch all the tiles that you pulled resource cubes from. So it made like a definite puzzle trying to figure out like, where do I want to pull resources from in order to put these tiles on the map?
Yep.
And then those tiles, once you place them, gave you other things like there were cards and moving the beagle. So that's how you progressed the game in order to get to the end of the game, was progressing the beagle by finding different animals.
Yeah. So it's really simple to get down because you're really just placing blocks on tiles. But the puzzle got really kind of pretty interesting as you went along trying to figure out what to do. And then you kind of affected other players with what you took. And yeah, so I thought it was really good. It was really pretty.
Because when BP got a break from what she was doing, she looked at the board and she was like, ooh, that looks really nice.
Yeah. So it looks really nice. It's got cool animals on it, which will win me over. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, I think the telling part was right before we ended the game, I think you sent me a message and you were just like, if we were at Gen Con physically, this would be my run from the demo to buy it game.
Well, I said it might be because I don't actually do that. But if I were inclined to do that.
Being a relative term.
Yeah. Which I kind of wish we were there because I guess it's not quite out yet. So it's not, we didn't find a way to purchase it easily other than kind of the version printed in Spain, but not like the Genius Games one.
Yeah, it looked like Artana might just now be finishing, fulfilling the Kickstarter, maybe like a month or two ago. Genius Games, either in like the next month or so, is supposed to have it ready.
But yeah, I'll be keeping an eye out for that one.
Yep, it was good. I enjoyed it.
BP, you didn't play it, but did you have any comments from what you saw of it? I don't know how much you watched in on it.
My initial reason I didn't get in is I was in a meeting that ended about 10 minutes right after the gameplay started. And I was very tempted, though, to jump into it based on the art. It looked really great. And then, Kiwi said he was having a real good time during it. And I was just kicking myself for not having the ability to.
Yeah, there was a penguin at the beginning of the game and I aimed myself to get that penguin. That was my goal. No. I wanted that penguin.
There are a lot of cool animals. It was really fun.
Yeah, that was it was really good.
So then following that, we watched a seminar on how to design with manufacturing in mind for Kiwi and I's haphazard attempt at designing a game. And it was actually really fun because we started figuring out box sizes. We ended up
talking a lot about design and talking about box sizes and how many discs you can get into depending on the box size. Sheet of
punch board.
Yeah. But it definitely like makes you think about when you look at games, or at least what they were talking about. When you look at a game, you're like, all right, what is the value of this game? And you're looking at all the components and stuff. Mm-hmm. It was very interesting. And it was done by two of the guys who work for Panda Manufacturing.
Yeah, so it was interesting. If you can, I don't know if they'll have that available anywhere or what.
But I think it's YouTube, on the Panda's YouTube or Facebook. So if you go to Panda's Facebook page, you can still go back and watch it. Same thing with the one that I missed, but I think you got to watch on day one. That one is also on their Facebook as well.
Following that, we went on to play another Genius Games, Genotype, a Mendelian genetics game. Designed by John Covew, Paul Solomon, and Ian Zhang. The artist is Thomas Bogus, published by Genius Games. The description is, Gregor Mendel is a 19th century Augustinian friar credited with the discovery of modern genetics. In Genotype, you play as his assistants, competing to collect experimental data on pea plants by trying to control how the plants inherit key traits from their parents, seed shape, flower color, stem color, and plant height. The observable traits of pea plant, its phenotype, is determined by its genetic makeup, its genotype. The relationship between genotype and phenotype is the nature of genetic inheritance are at the heart of Genotype, a Mendelian genetics game. The mechanics are dice rolling, drafting, set collection, simulation, tech trees, tech tracks, worker placement. So I guess, a quick Ooh, description of how this one's played. This was one where during the rules, we were like, oh man, what did we get into? But
Worker placement. So some of the actions you could take are you could get plants from the nursery. You could get tools, which gave you basically special powers. You could get money. You could change. So there were different gene types. What was it? R, F, G, and T. And then the whole Mendelian cube, right? Is that what you call it?
Or square? Punnett square.
Punnett square. So you have, you know, the capital, which is for the dominant gene, and then the lowercase letter for the recessive gene. And you can change how, like, one of the action spaces you could go to, you could change, you know, instead of having a capital R and a lowercase letter for each side of the square, you could make it so it was two lowercase. So you could increase the chances of having more recessive genes. And then you could also put it on spaces where you would get first choice or in a specific gene type or first choice from any of the gene types.
And that would be first choice of the drafting dice phase of the game.
Phase, yeah. So it was really, it was three phases. The first phase was all the players doing their actions.
Like worker placement phase. Trying
to set themselves up for the dice phase. And then the dice phase, once they're rolled, they equate to the different types of genes and like if they're recessive or dominant. Or what was the one in between?
It's a heterozygous dominant.
Yeah. So then you draft those in order to like put them on your pea pods, because the pea pod cards will have like, hey, this card needs a, you know, a dominant R. So you have to like collect that to cover it up.
Well, I was like, for the draft dicing, like essentially you would roll them and then like based on the Punnett square, it would tell you like a one goes to this spot, a two goes to this spot, that kind of thing.
And then the third phase basically let you purchase things with money that you got in the other phases. So you could hire assistants, which gave you different powers. You could add more workers.
Tools.
All kinds of different stuff.
A lot of different stuff.
Yeah, there are a lot of different things. And you just did that, what was it, five rounds, I think?
Yeah, five or six, I don't remember. Yeah, it was a lot to take in at first, but I think once we got, it took a little longer to pick up, but I think by halfway through, like it started to click. I mean, there were still like a few options that I still didn't even know until the end of the game, but yeah. At least I got the core of it down, I think. What'd you think?
I really enjoyed it. It was worker placement is one of my favorite mechanics. So like, I really like that piece. I liked the dice drafting mechanic in Coimbra. So it was a little similar to that.
I would say like we've said a few times with the dice drafting games that like we like them, but then they had so much other stuff. We wish they would focus on that like central drafting mechanic. And I think this was better than Coimbra for me in that regard, but it was still like, and I knew you would like this game because I'm like, there's a whole big piece of worker placement and then there's a whole big piece of dice drafting. And then just the whole, like the way you plant your plants and then do the whole, like finding the traits and putting them on there. And then on top of that, You've got all like the tokens and the tools and the assistants. I don't even think I got an assistant the whole game. Cause I was like,
I didn't either.
One of the other players really well for her.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where it's just like, man, I don't know what to do first. But, and I think I said it out loud in the game. I was like, I don't know what to do first, but it's a worker placement game. So get more workers is like,
yep.
That's what I'm going to go for.
Yeah, it was definitely one where it reminded me of more like an Agricola or Caverna where there's more to the game than you can do in a single play. So you just got to pick what you're going with and go with it. And I enjoyed it. It was just maybe a little bit heavier than I think I would not want to teach it for one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't as pretty as on Origin of Species. The board was very functional. It wasn't bad. It didn't really jump out, I don't think. It didn't have quite the same table presence, at least online. You know, you never know in person. BP, did you observe any of that and have any comments other than what you've thrown in?
I did observe some of it, and it seemed very complex just trying to listen at the beginning, that I don't know if it would have been one that I would have gotten very into, but
I liked it a lot. I don't think I feel like Viticulture is a very similar-ish game. Mm. Like the themes are very different, and I felt like Genotype played very well into the theme.
Yeah. But oh yeah, for sure.
It's like it's so similar to Viticulture that I don't think I would get it, because I don't think it would replace Viticulture for me.
Yeah. I mean, I love the history aspect of the story. It's just really, especially at the beginning as he was like explaining it, it just seemed so like, I mean, I don't know, like I did not do any science.
Which I think Eric made a comment about that.
Yeah. So as I have a biology background, and when he's throwing out all the mechanics on top of that, he's throwing out genetics terms. And I was like, man, I'm having a hard time with this. And I at least know what he's talking about. I can't imagine somebody with no background in like genetics. That would just be an even another layer on top of it. But I do think it is actually a really good teaching aid for like, the Punnett Square, and you know, especially if you were to add in like an educator, if you've somebody like a genetics professor or something, we're like throwing on top of it, you know, the details on what these things mean and why they matter. It's, I mean, the Punnett Square and stuff is really just statistics, and a puzzle game is a really good way of going through those. So I liked it for that. It, you know, it follows kind of what Genius Games tries to accomplish pretty well.
Yeah. And I was going to say that, like, you know, this is our third Genius game that we've played. And I feel like all of the three that we've played, like thematic, like we're strong thematically, and all of the mechanics like build super well into the theme. And they're like, I really enjoyed all of the Genius games that we've played.
I think for me, like with this one, I don't know that it would, like I wouldn't add it to my collection, one, because I don't want to teach it. But even on top of that, I just feel like it did a little too much of what other games do. I think dice drafting is probably the biggest thing I don't know that we have much of. But whereas on The Origin of Species, I was like, oh, this is like different to me. I'm sure there's other games like it. There always are. But for at least what's in my collection, I was like, this would be a good addition because it doesn't quite overlap with anything.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So on to day three. Interlude music here. Welcome to day three of Gen Con.
Day three.
Day three.
Oddly enough, I don't feel as tired as I normally am on day three.
No, because not at all.
I had pancakes I made in my own house after sleeping in my own bed.
I do miss getting in 20,000 steps in a day.
Yeah, there is a significant drop.
The old
in the
man
steps.
Yelling at me because I'm not wearing my badge.
Yeah, well, your
properly.
Badge is backwards. Yeah. Yeah. If you want, we can make badges for the house, and I can randomly yell at you.
For not wearing
your
it
badge?
Properly.
I think by day three, we would have finally made it through the entire vendor hall.
Yeah.
And we've probably wandered in like once or twice on this day.
And I did see Mandy posted on Instagram, was it yesterday or the night before, she had dyed her hair. So I would have probably like tried to find our Dice Tower favorites at least once.
We had at least one awkward interaction with somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we would have gone to the Renegade booth for the first game we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So our first game of the day was Athenium Mystic Library. This is a design by L'Atelier, which is a design group similar to Prospero Hall, who we've talked about before. And the artist is Veronica Fedorova. It's a great name.
Which I noticed she did some of the art for Role Player Adventures.
Oh, cool.
The new role player game. Yeah.
All right. The description is, the magic exam is tomorrow, so you and your classmates head to the library. With a knock of a magic wand on a precise stack of books, ta-da, you can learn an entire subject in an instant. In exchange for this after-hours intrusion, however, the security guard asks you to clean up and organize the library shelves. Why is the security guard in charge of the library shelves?
Well, it's after hours.
Okay, that makes sense. So roll up your sleeves and get to work. The mechanics are card drafting and tile placement. I often break into places and the security guy is, well, clean up here when you're done. Yeah.
I did kind of mutter under my breath when she was reading that off with our game instructor was that, nope, that sounds, I mean, waiting till the last minute and procrastinating on your studies sounds like total students.
Skewy, you want to explain this one?
Yeah, so it's played in two phases. The phases play similarly. It's just the cards are a little bit different. For time, we only played the first phase. So basically, everybody has a shelf or a bookshelf that's kind of split up into different areas. And then there are different kind of objective cards which show you what shelf it wants to be on and kind of an order of books. And the books are a lot like Ex Libris, where different colors of books equate to different types of subjects. So like the light blue was biographies and histories. Right. The green was like beast. Well, the person who built the Tabletopia mod, it was beastly text boxes instead of beastly textbooks, which our person Susie thought was very funny.
Mm-hmm.
So then everybody will get six cards. You will play one. The cards are split up into kind of three areas. The bottom of the card is what you will get. And then the top of the card is split in half. And one side is what the player on your left will get. And the other side is what your player on your right will get. So you really have to make decisions on what you need, but how will that affect the person to your left and right? Because you're going to give them something as well.
That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I did not at first either. And then I realized, oh, okay. But I mean, I feel like you can only have done that so much, but yes.
And then once you place the items that you got, you then passed your hand to the player to the left and you did it again. So in the first phase, all of those cards were mostly books with a little bit of other stuff thrown in. And then the second phase, she said that it was a lot more ability to rearrange your books. So the idea being is that your bookshelf is full. So in order to get it to the objectives you need, you need to rearrange the books that are in your bookshelf.
Which I would have really enjoyed because I feel like my last two rounds, I couldn't really do anything.
Yeah. And then the objectives are kind of on like a conveyor belt almost, where they're only out for a certain amount of time, but new objectives come out as it progresses, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I like that, because you had to kind of plan ahead and be like, well, this one's going to go and I can't complete it this round, so don't even bother look down at the other ones.
And there were wands, and those wands were how you claimed. But if you were out of wands, you couldn't claim an objective. So you had to like figure out ways to get back wands, which could either be from bonuses or some of the objectives gave you wands back. That's basically it. And then you got points at the end for filling out portions of your bookshelf. If you had like decorations, which were like candles you could put around your bookshelf, you got additional points for those.
So what did you think, BP?
I liked it. Yeah. Kiwi and I had talked during the game while we were muted that it did remind us of the Ex Libris. But I feel like, I don't know, I liked the components and the way that you organized the shelves much better than Ex Libris.
It's more intuitive because we struggled with that on Ex Libris. This was pretty obvious how they stacked in.
Yeah, and I liked the spiders and like the added bonuses and things that you got. I also really liked the mechanic of that the card that you chose, right, also affected the people to your left and right, and that you passed your hands. Like the fourth person that was playing with us did not, I think, really like that so much. But I liked that you got a new hand every time. So you really like, we're almost starting afresh at every round.
What people at home cannot see is as BP was describing all of this, she was waving her hand around in circles the whole time. So just imagine while you listen to that. She's just waving her hands in circles.
Yeah, I don't know.
There was a not very enthusiastic.
No, yet. I didn't really get into this one. Not sure why. I don't know. I just like the tile. It was nice looking, and like I did like the tile placement and stuff, but it just didn't, I kind of got to the point where I was like, I'm just going to pick the card of the two things that, or at least something I would want. And then like, I think there were a couple times where like the card point cards or whatever were out that I just didn't have any books for. And I was like, I guess I'm just going to play whatever and hope that the other people give me a good book, and they didn't. And then I don't know. Like, I guess I didn't really have anything to do if I didn't have the correct book in my hands. And I was just like, trying to fill up a shelf with books, and it didn't really do anything.
And I wonder how differently it would play as a two-player right. game, because what she said was, is that for a two-player game, you would just, the card you played, you would get everything on the bottom, and the card on top, you would get everything on top. Or your opponent would get everything on top, so you would get both the gray and the blue block.
Yeah. But I think beyond that, it was also just a very pretty abstract game. Like, the theme didn't really play into it too much. You're putting tiles down. It felt like you're building out a Tetris map. Block. Not really. It's not really Tetris, so it's not like that, but you know what I mean? Like, you're just putting tiles down.
I liked it a lot more than Ex Libris, because at least, like, with Ex Libris, you know, your bookshelf is kind of abstract because you don't have a bookshelf. You're just kind of placing your cards down. Whereas this one, your bookshelf is given to you. So it's a little easier to see, like, this is where I would put my books. And one of the rules with placing the books was it had to be supported. Mm-hmm. So it either had to be up against another book or like one of the side walls or inner wall of the bookshelf. So it kind of changed up where you could put stuff, which was a little bit different than Ex Libris, where you just had to have a card below it in order to continue stacking up. I like this one more than Ex Libris, even though Ex Libris did have that worker placement aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't miss it in this. I liked the card play more in this. And this one just seemed like a much easier game to teach.
Yeah, it seemed like a cleaner version of Ex Libris.
Yeah, and with still having the funny book titles like in Ex Libris.
Yeah.
Then we played a online D&D game. I'm not sure online play is for us. We'll put it that way.
I mean, I think we've played D&D online. I didn't really mind that so much.
But with each other.
Yeah, right. I think had we known the other players or known the GM, I feel like it might have been better. I feel like it's easier to play with people you don't know in person because you can get those visual cues, like when someone's about to talk or like if they're agitated or whatever, that you don't get when you're just talking through a computer with Discord and don't have video.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at, is like online in kind of a random convention setting, just.
Right.
It was hard to play off each other. It was hard. There was a lot of like just moments of dead air, of just silence where people were not sure who was doing what or like, I think the DM was, you know, doing a bit of reading and a bit of behind the scenes stuff, which is normal and okay. But in person, you would see them looking through things. And then online, it's just sort of like, should we be doing something? Should we be?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if, you know, having something that was more set up with a visual, like instead of using just Discord, using something like Google Meets or Zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a visual one. But then a lot of people don't like to do that. So then if you're doing convention.
Well, I think that also requires that everybody has a webcam. So you sort of have to do this to the lowest common.
Right.
Denominator. Yeah. Yeah.
Which try to most include everybody.
Have a laptop with a mic. Yeah. So you can do it. Which, by the way, if you're out there and you're doing an online thing, please mute your mic.
Yeah.
Or use push to talk.
In this world of new online, you know, everything.
Right. There's a lot of new etiquette.
A good $20 headset or a dynamic microphone is what you're looking for. They can be pretty cheap. USB, you just plug them in and go. It will make your audio so much better.
Yeah, but even if you can't afford a microphone and you have like a laptop or something, just if you're eating, mute your mic or put it on push to talk, just so you're like, you know, and if you got kids screaming in the background, like, please just push to talk or mute, because
it would be
just
everyone will have a better time. Headsets are great too, so you don't get feedback.
Yes. Yeah. Wear a headset, even if it doesn't have a mic attached.
Or not just a headset. Yeah. Just headphones.
Yeah. I use my little earbud kind of one, so don't need anything fancy.
If that's something in your budget, highly recommend. That wraps up day 3 of Gen Con. On to day 4. Look at the day 4 of Gen Con.
Woo!
Day 4.
Yeah. So I mean, we're supposed to be loopy and out of it by now. So we're on course for standard. So first up today, while I was sleeping, Kiwi and PP played Codinka, designed by Leonard Boyd and David Bradshaw.
Mm-hmm. We played with Leonard Boyd.
Artistry by Leonard Boyd and published by Backspindle Games Ninja Division. That's an intense name.
Well, I think it's two different companies. I think it's because he had a shirt on that said Backspindle Games.
So tell me about the game.
Well, first of all, can I just say that Leonard Boyd is Irish? And so it was really like, so I will say like the one unique thing about Gen Con and online is that like it was like afternoon in Ireland for him. You were sleeping and we were still having our breakfast and waking up. And that's how Gen Con online works, apparently. So I just want to say that. Yeah, it was interesting. Sorry, Kiwi, go.
It's a tile switching game. So tile placement is the mechanics, but the board starts with a grid of 4x4, and there's four different tiles that have different symbols, and there's four colors. So there's four tiles of each color. Every player has the same. So like every player is trying to make a diagonal, a straight line, corners, and then make a 2x2 box.
But so the same
sides
shapes
to the tile. Yeah, same shapes, but there's two sides to the tile. So there's a white side, which was stone, and then a yellow side, which was gold. And so maybe you had the four straight, but the two end pieces needed to be gold and the two center pieces needed to be stone. So on your turn, you could take two actions, and the actions you could take are you could take one of your tiles, replace it or switch it with a tile that is adjacent to it, or you could flip it over to its opposite side. And so everybody's trying to do that, going around in circles, trying to make their patterns. And the player who got their four patterns first was the winner. Yes. There were also some special cards that would like let you flip over all the tiles to match the pattern that was on the card. Or on the other side, it let you do one of two free special moves.
It was kind of like, you know, I don't know if you guys ever played. I mean, these puzzles were old even when I was a kid, but like those old block puzzles that you would have in a shape and then you could move around and even sometimes like flip them over, almost like pre-Rubik's Cube style. I mean, that's what like...
You're talking about the slider puzzles?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I could go with that.
A little advanced.
Yeah.
If you showed up to a game and they just handed you a slider puzzle, it'd be a real disappointment.
And go. So we played twice. We played a three-player game with the designer, and then the second game, it was just BP and I playing against each other. I thought it worked well at both a two-player and a three-player game.
That's cool.
It's one of those games.
Can we say BT Dubs? Who won both games?
Oh, yeah. BP won both games.
She won three out of four games today.
Today is my day.
Yeah.
BP Sunday. BP's
day. Apparently, everybody was so tired on day four. they gave
BP an edge. Snap.
Yeah, it was super interesting. The rules were very, very simple. Mm-hmm. Like, you do one of two actions and you're just trying to make patterns, but everybody else is trying to make patterns as well. So you're trying to guess, like, if I do this move, like, this other person, like, that'll set them up. Like, it was very interesting. And he was talking about they have tournaments where they use like a chess speed clock and they do it 2-on-2. And like, that's part of the thing. He said that in one of the tournaments, he got beat in 28 seconds.
22.
That was the total time that 22 seconds, the total time that his opponent played. So like BP and I think we both really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I mean, I could see like 3 to 4 players because it was a 4-player max that it kind of gets, I'm really curious, Eric, to play it with you because I feel like it almost has more of that kind of chaotic moment because when it was 3 players, like you could be spending like a turn or two trying to set up, right, your pattern and just to have someone come through and just like totally demolish it and move all your tiles, you know? So in that sense, it was kind of fun with the more players, but the 2-player was also really interesting because I don't know. I'm not a big chess player. I feel like that's long strategy, but it really is like, how can you like beat this person to the next move or thwart them? Like I did at one point, I think in the first game with the three of us, just I was like, you know what? I'm just going to play this card because I can see what Kiwi's trying to do. And I'm just going to mess him all up. And I did like one of those free cards where you could just basically almost rearrange the board. And
yeah, which you would think is annoying. But towards the beginning of the game, when you have all four of your patterns, there are a couple of times where like people did like a big move using the free move. And I was like, OK, well, I'll just go for this other pattern because I'm actually better set up for that. Towards the end, it can get not frustrating, but like that's when it gets annoying because it's just like, fuck, I was trying to get that pattern. And now like I'm all out of whack because of this move that, you know, this other person did.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And it was pretty fast.
We learned, we played a 3-player game, we played a 2-player game, and we still had 10 minutes left at the end of our hour.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you'd both play it again?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely. He did say that Greater Than Games, mm-hmm. for those curious, Greater Than Games is carrying it in the U.S.
So next up, Kiwi drove to a hurricane. So he did not participate in the next game, which was Into Deep, which is designed by Josh Capel and Daryl Chow. The art is by Dominic Meyer. And it's published by Burnt Island Games. Where do you even begin with this? So I guess to describe it, it's kind of, so it's a story-based game. So you're kind of like, you're infiltrating a criminal syndicate. And so you're carrying out missions for them. But you're trying to gather evidence against them. You each get like a story card of like a job going down. And so it's like a kidnapping. And then you're trying to, it's like it's a modular board or circular board that sort of matches like the city locations. And then there's tokens on them, like a gun or blaster and, you know, a car. Yeah. Different items that like will pertain. And then, so you'll have a mission job, like your primary job. That's like you're hijacking an elevator. So you need to get the electronic device and bring it to this location. And then there's like 6 criminal tokens. So like you can hook the criminal and basically they're under your control. And then you can like
special abilities.
Yeah. Which you can unlock the longer you have them under your control, like the more you unlock of their powers. And so like one of them was the sprinter. And so initially you just have no powers and you can move them around, pick up items and then take them to the location to do the mission essentially. And then as you gain their powers, like the sprinter could move 2 spaces. And then, so as you do, as everyone sort of unlocks missions, then you kind of advance the story with the more complex missions. And then you also have like side missions you can do that are a little bit easier. And then each time you finish a mission, you get some, what are those purple cards called? Dilemma
cards. Yeah. Cause I mean, it basically, the cards indicate how, because you're infiltrating a syndicate. So basically kind of the moral of the game is how much are you getting into the syndicate and how much are you staying a good cop undercover? You know what I mean? So it's like trying to play with that moral ambiguity on being undercover and solving crimes. And so the dilemma cards would be, you get them and you collect them, but they can be both good and bad. Like either, they're going to end up showing that you're like way too criminal of a mind and you've gone in too deep and now you've like switched over to the dark side, or depending on how like the end of game scoring goes. Like
they also give you points and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Points and boosters. Yeah. And
More points. And then you're also getting evidence. Mm-hmm, and I didn't 100% understand how all the evidence stuff worked, but basically you're picking up tokens that have evidence on them and then
moving them over into different place.
Yeah. And you get bonuses and stuff for that. And this affects scoring at the end of the game.
Yes.
For reasons that I don't know that BP and I fully understood, but it didn't really impact us that much. I will say he did a really good job explaining it and like not overloading us up front. Because at first I was like, oh, this seems easy. And then he just kept adding more and more onto it. And so like, I don't think we got it all, but we got enough to like have a good kind of playthrough of it.
Yeah. And that's what I really appreciated. Again, like kind of at the end of the weekend and thinking about like kind of all, I mean, it's definitely much more difficult for a lot of people to do much of this, right? Just online. But he was definitely very good on kind of piecemealing the information we would need to do to get going. And obviously, I mean, if you listen to this podcast, you know that Eric and I tend to do a lot better learning with our hands on. And so I do think that while it seemed a little overwhelming at the beginning, as he was describing everything, he was very good about like kind of walking through and then being like, okay, we'll talk about all of these other things. Like when we get
when
there,
when it matters.
Yeah.
Like when you'd actually understand it. It's like, I think for this might have been the most complex game we played.
I kind of felt that way as we were playing it, but it did not feel like it because
and we got into
so,
playing.
Yeah.
Like within not 5 minutes, but we got in playing it quicker than I think almost any of the other games, which
absolutely.
Are, yeah. So kudos to Josh.
So we only went through two chapters. There are a total of three, I think. Right.
Yep.
And then, like it took me almost a whole full play to get like one of the side missions. I don't even think it was like a whole mission card.
Yeah, she had a rough first chapter, but then she had a great second chapter, and I had a rough second chapter. So kind of like, because like it can depend on like, okay, I have a mission to do this, but like I need three of the agents on this side of the board, and they can't get there, and so I gotta like maneuver that. Plus, you're all so then like I can take BP will control an agent, and then I need that one, so then I'll take over her agent. Mm-hmm. And move it away from where she was working towards. So it sounded like the last game where you said like everybody's sort of trying to complete a puzzle, but you're using the same pieces. And it was the same in this game of like, okay, well, I need that scanner over in this section of the city, but BP needs it in the other way. And so we're fighting over this scanner thing. And it's like you're almost like you've almost moved all your pieces into position. And all of a sudden, BP takes your jumper and jumps them across the map. And you're like, oh, okay, then.
But. And sometimes that worked out in your favor, as it did for me many times at that like last chapter.
Sometimes somebody moves them in the direction you were trying to go, and you're like, oh, thanks. Or it's somehow, and then that's where the complexity comes in, because like there's like five different ways you can accomplish each little thing. And so like, I think at one point BP is like, oh, now I'm screwed. I have to do this. And he's like, well, there's also this power, like each little city section has a power on it. And he's like, you could use that and it'll accomplish the same thing. And save you actions and stuff. So
I think art-wise, it was pretty interesting as well. Like, as far as like most of, I mean, that I played, I didn't get to play the pretty games on Friday, but for the ones that we, I mean, compared to Kadinka, again, it's fairly simplistic, but the art on this was pretty good. And
we were using, he said this was mostly sort of prototype. It's going to Kickstarter in September,
right.
I think he
said.
So September it wasn't 15th. Finalized art, but it was still good in even everything we saw.
I mean, would you guys play it again?
Yes.
I think I would. I'd really enjoy playing it with the three of us and just because I think I was a little that we had another player with us. Yeah, and he was nice and stuff, but I just in this kind of game where it's very screw each other over.
Yes.
Sometimes intentionally, sometimes not. Like I'm hesitant to do that with somebody I don't know.
I was almost wondering if Josh, like, I think he picked up that you and I knew each other because, like, I mean, it was like constant Eric and I back and forth.
Was sure the third guy was going to win just because we were going to like sabotage each other. But essentially, the way actually how BP won is she had taken so much of these pink bad, potentially bad cards. So she was the one who was in too deep. But because of then it comes down to like whether or not we can foil her with the evidence, which I guess plays a bigger role in the third chapter that we didn't play through. Yeah. He sort of like simulated as if it had been done.
So I only simulated one.
Yeah. It's asterisk on the win.
For sure.
So like, if we had managed to foil her with evidence, she would have lost because it would be a massive negative penalty for her cards. But since we didn't foil her, she got all these points for being in too deep. Yeah, so that's In Too Deep. And then the third game we played was Stellar, designed by Ben Pinchback and Matt Riddle. The art is by Tim Barton, Janice Urban, and it's published by Renegade Games. So in this one, it's a two-player game, and I'm not sure why it's a two-player game, but I guess we can get to that. It's stargazing, and it's kind of like a telescope, essentially. And so you have a set of cards you can pick from? Like a card draft out, like 1 through 5, mm-hmm. and then you'll have different things. The categories are planets, moons, gaseous blobs, asteroids, and black holes.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget the satellites.
And then there's satellites, which act as a wild card. And so what you want to do is you'll take one, you'll draw a card from the draft into your hand, and then you'll play a card, and you have basically the telescope grid, which is, I guess, that it's supposed to represent the night sky. So the things you're seeing. And so you can play it onto this grid of, I don't know how to describe it. It's like a pyramid kind of, so like 4 at the base, mm-hmm. then 3, and then 2, and then 2, and then 1. And so it's like a grid like that. And so you're playing it into the night sky, or you can play it into your notebook. So it's basically the things you've seen. So if you play it to your night sky, there's stars on the card, and those will count for points. And if you play it to your notebook, that is a multiplier that will apply to the stars. So like if I had one planet with two stars on my sky, and I had a run, so it's a run of cards. So it's numbered 1 through 5. So you'd need 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So if you have like a run of 1, you'd multiply 2 stars by 1 and get 2 points. But if you had a run of 5, you would get 10 points. So it's kind of like you're looking at your notebook to try to build up your multiplier, but also your night sky to have a lot of stars on that. And then you also score based on section of the sky. So the person who has the most points, not stars, but like points on the card, will score I think it was 10 points per section. So like you draw one and you play it, and then the number on that card, so like let's say a planet with a 1, I would then also get the 1 card from the draft, and then that would play to the opposite. So if I played it to my notebook, that would play to the night sky, and if I played it to the sky, it would play to my notebook. So that's kind of like the whole trick of the game, is you're trying to like build all these combinations and stuff, and then you're trying to figure out what to draft that will trigger like the next card you want to then play to the other location. That was probably a terrible description. That's a hard one to describe.
It was. I now
feel a lot better for the person who taught us the rules, because we had a rough rule session. I think she tried to describe the whole game to us like I just did, and it was probably our most complicated rule description for the easiest game we played.
I feel like at the end, like she asked if we liked it, and I think. Eric said you would probably like it more than me, which.
No, I said our third, because she knew you had the ticket originally. I said, oh, yeah, our third who was supposed to play would really enjoy this. And PP said, yeah, I think he'd enjoy it more. And then trailed off awkwardly.
Yeah, I don't know that it was for me. It was.
It's very mathy.
I'm going to be honest. The art doesn't really do anything for me.
Yeah.
Just looking at the pictures.
It's interesting, especially since 2 weeks ago, I spent like a whole week trying to look at a stupid comet that I never saw. I mean, I like astronomy and stuff, but it didn't really, I mean, it doesn't really play into the game at all. I mean, you're just picking up planets and cards stuff and playing them out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the cards could just be anything with numbers and matching.
You could probably do this with a deck of cards, just with, mm-hmm. you need 5 suits. I'd play, I probably wouldn't play it again.
No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't terrible. I just don't know that I enjoyed it enough to play it again. I mean, like really the only big mechanic other than a bunch of math in your head is a drafting mechanic. And I feel like we've got so many other drafting mechanic games that we like that I wouldn't really justify going back to this. That's Gen Con Online 2020. Can't wait for next year, hopefully to be there and
in person.
Do stuff. I guess we should have our big hall of games we're walking away with, but
I mean, there might be some that we did play this weekend we might go back and look at, but yeah, it's definitely a different year. just we hope everybody's well and that we can help support some of those that did not get to participate in some of the in-person cons that really they survive on. So I know we don't like to bring that kind of stuff up usually on this show, but we do really appreciate our artists and vendors. So if you have recommendations for games you want to hear us talk about or thinking ahead for Gen Con 2021, send them our way at email firstturntabletop@gmail.com or the Twitter and Instagram, where you could see some pictures of the Kiwi and I getting ready for some of our Gen Con 2020. And then if not, don't forget our podcasting camel.
The Gen Con camel.
The Gen Con camel. I feel like we're going to need a t-shirt. Yes, that is Gen Con 2021, Eric, podcasting camel. So he says, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all your favorite podcatchers. We're so looking forward to hearing from you. And play more games.
Coimbra. I didn't read that. I remembered it.
I read it.
I didn't read it. I was too slow getting there. It's the interlude music.
Well, I couldn't remember what our old interlude music was, so I was going to do that, but then I just went...
I hope this is just the interlude.
Hold on, let me get my blanket back in place. This is some real day four energy right here.